basically flesh out some of the problems in the Megillah. Two problems specifically that come up at the beginning of the Megillah. I'll give you a few possible solutions to each of the problems, but I'm not sure what works, so hopefully we'll work this through together, and if we come up with something good, that's great. If we don't, so it was... you got an F for effort, right? That's how they say it. Fine. Now, at the beginning of the Megillah, so we encounter this episode of the famous beauty pageant that Ahasuerus has to try to choose himself a new queen, because like the idiot decided to kill his wife or banish her, something. It wasn't good, so he needs a new wife, and they have a beauty pageant, etc. And the Megillah introduces us to two figures. One figure is Mordechai, and one figure is Esther, right? These are the two major figures in the Megillah. What we pointed out last week is that these are the major figures in terms of our perception of the story. If you just read the text, the name that appears most often is Ahasuerus, but he's not really doing anything. He's like this inconsequential figure. That was what we focused on last week. So we're introduced to Mordechai and to Esther, and the Megillah tells us that Esther is related to Mordechai. Basically, she's raised by Mordechai. She's like Mordechai's daughter. Everything is grand. And then, Perek Beis Pasuk Ches, when they hear the word of the king, and when all the girls are gathered in Shushan Habira, so Esther is taken, and she's taken to Haggai, who's in charge of the women, and somehow Haggai likes Esther, and he gives her lots of perfumes, cosmetics, and the like. He gives her 7 girls to help her out, and everything is fine. But then we encounter the next thing, which is like a major principle in the Megillah, which is Lo Higida Esther Amav Es Molatai. Underline this pasuk, that Esther does not tell of her nation, and Molata is her birth. In other words, Esther doesn't say where she came from, because Mordechai told her not to tell. Right? Mordechai says, don't say anything, so therefore Esther doesn't say. Correct? That's a story in the Megillah. The Pasuk a little bit later says, again, Pasuk Chav, that Esther doesn't tell where she's from. She doesn't talk about her nation, because, like Mordechai commanded her. And Esther's a very dutiful, obedient young woman, or not so young. According to Chazal, she's around 75 years old, no?
What?
It totally changes your perspective. But according to some of the comments in the Midrash, she's like 75 years old at this point. So that's also interesting. The king is choosing a 75-year-old.
75 was like 35 back in those days.
Maybe. No idea. But the fact is, Esther is dutiful. She's obedient. She does what Mordechai tells her, and she doesn't tell. So there is an emphasis in the Megillah about not telling who you are. And apparently the idea is that, you know, this is a time of anti-Semitism. And at times of anti-Semitism, Jews hide their identity. No, Jews in France today don't walk around with a kippah. You walk around with like a little cap or something.
But then they figure it out about the cap, just like the
regular. So, but you try as best as you can to hide your identity, and that seems to be what's going on. Yeah, Rana.
I think the emphasis seems to be more on that, like Mordechai told her not to tell,
So she wanted to tell, but Mordechai is telling her not to tell. Correct. Which is also very interesting. In other words, she is listening to the instructions of don't tell. Presumably, I'm assuming those instructions are because of anti-Semitism, but that's the basis. Now, the problem is that the same Mordechai who's instructing Esther, don't tell, right? Later on, Haman is appointed, and there's a law in the country that everyone is supposed to bow down to Haman. On the top of the second side of the page, there's a law that everyone is supposed to bow down to Haman because the king said bow down, but Mordechai does not bow down. Why does Mordechai not bow down? Because he says he's a Jew. And Jews don't do that. Now, the problem is, right, if we're hiding our Jewishness, if Esther's not telling who she is, because Mordechai says, don't tell who you are, so how come Mordechai is suddenly, you know, singing Okshin Chesliver Yapata Mushto all day? How come he's like so proud of his Jewishness? I'm not going to bow down. hello, like, if it's in a dangerous situation, so, right? So hide your Jewishness. Now, I know what you're thinking, but I'll let you say it.
Wasn't one of the reasons why he didn't bow down is because Haman was wearing something that Mordechai could
see? Okay, so there's a number of reasons that we'll go through as to why Mordechai does not bow down to Haman. Rashi comments, I give you the Rashi at the top of the second side of the page. Rashi comments because Haman made himself a god. Right? There's a Medrash that Tosis quotes here in Sanhedrin. It's not that Haman made himself a god. It's that Haman had some Avodah Zarah attached to his garments.
Right.
Right? So there are religious reasons why Mordechai can't bow down. But what I don't understand is as follows.
That fits in with what
you're saying. I don't understand that. So what you're suggesting is that maybe Esther doesn't have to say that she's Jewish. Right, so therefore she hides it.
Right.
But Mordechai, you don't have a choice. God said I can't bow down, so I'm going to, right?
Yeah.
I don't have a choice. That's your suggestion. The problem is that you always have a choice. And the choice is don't show up.
Right.
The choice is, like, okay, so idiot, what are you thinking? No? Why? And Chazal say, by the way, that Mordechai used to make himself present so that whenever Haman comes by, Mordechai is standing nice and tall, I am not bowing down. No? Haman gets angry. The pasuk says, Velo kum, velo zamimenu. Not only did Mordechai not bow down, Mordechai didn't stand up and not, right? Oh, rise! Haman is entering. Mordechai sits down on the floor. Right? He's like the chutzpedik guy. Like, what the heck are you thinking? Right? Don't do it. Now, obviously, and there are many statements in Chazal to this effect, you know, at the time, Mordechai was probably not very popular. I imagine that, like, all the Jews are, like, knocking on his door and saying, idiot, hello, you're going to kill all of us. It's a time of anti-Semitism. Just, you know, shut up, go away, leave, or bow down. We're all bowing down. And there might be halachic justification to bow down also. Like the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, if I serve Avodah Zarah, me ahav o me yira. Let's say everyone bows down to an Avodah Zarah because that's the law, but there's no acceptance of that item as a deity. So there's a dispute between Abaye and Rava, no? Abaye says, the Gemara in Sanhedrin Samach Aleph, Abaye says Chayiv, Rava says Pater. Abaye says Chayiv, the Hapocha. Abaye says, if I bow down to an idol because they are telling me I have to do so, that's not really idolatry. Idolatry means, right, that you accept it on yourself. Idolatry means a religious sense. If it's a mechanical act of bowing, that's not idolatry. Right? And Rava says that there's no idolatry involved in bowing down to an idol when they force you to do so. If you do it, me'ahava or me'ira, right? The Gemara says is you do it because you're scared. That's not idolatry. So the question is, right? So there might have been justification to bow down. Now, Tosis already deals with this issue in Sanhedrin. Tosis, one second. If Rava, usually we follow Rava in halacha rather than Abaye. And if Rava says that you're justified to bow down, so how come the Jewish people didn't bow down? Or how come, well, the Jewish people probably did bow down, but what was Mordechai thinking when Mordechai doesn't bow down? And how come people give up their lives not to bow down, just thinking your mind, okay, you are not an idol, and then I'll bow down and I'll save my life. Because I am not really, it's not an act of worship, it's just, right? It's just mechanical. What? So Tosis, so am I allowed to do that? Lifnim Mishur HaSadim? Am I allowed to go above and beyond the call of law and die? I have an obligation not to die.
What about the slippery slope theory?
Which is?
Which is, okay, today it's bowing down to the idol, tomorrow might be something else.
Yeah, but when the stakes are so great and you could potentially lose your life by not doing something, so get involved in the slippery slope and hopefully it doesn't get so slippery. Right?
Live to fight another day.
I mean, it just, it does. So Tosis has a suggestion, which is Tosis, according to their own approach, Tosis says, you know what, that they didn't bow down, even though, Tosis says like this, when Rava tells us in the Gemara, that if I serve Avodah Zarah, me'ahav or me'ira, if I serve an idol, not out of conviction, but because I'm scared, all Rava means is I don't get put to death for that. I'm putter, in other words, Beis Din won't kill me for
that's
worshiping
nice.
An idol. But I'm not allowed to do it anyway.
But isn't it one of the cardinal sins?
Huh? Yes, it's one of the cardinal sins. And usually a cardinal sin, I should lose my life. Okay. But Quartos, this is like an interesting case that I don't lose
no,
my
I
life.
Know what you're saying about
fine. Now, the real problem over here, okay, so we have like a small halachic issue as to what exactly is going on. How come Mordechai is not bowing down? How come they are bowing down? Obviously, both positions have to be defended. I like the approach, actually, that the issue over here was not genuine idolatry. The issue was the appearance of idolatry. Right? Especially if, remember, bowing down to people is standard practice in many countries.
Mm-hmm.
It's not idolatry.
It's like shaking hands.
It's like shaking hands. If you're in Japan, right? Good morning, you bow down, no? And it says in Shulchan Aruch, I'm allowed to bow down to people. So bowing down to Haman per se wouldn't be the problem. The only issue is that there's some appearance of idolatry. Mordechai perhaps felt that for the appearance of idolatry, one is obligated to give up his or her life. And those in the generation who disagreed with Mordechai said, you don't have to give up your life. This comment, by the way, is what the Vilna Gaon has in Shulchan Aruch. There is a discussion in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Let's say I lose some money in front of a fountain that has a big icon, the big idol on the fountain. Am I allowed to bend down to pick up the loose change?
No.
So the Gemara says, don't do it. And the Gemara says, even if it's a fountain of water, and you're really thirsty, and if you don't drink the water, you're going to die, don't do it.
It's
so, that case is not really Avodah Zarah. That case is the appearance of Avodah Zarah. The Rishonim debate, the Rashba takes that Gemara seriously. The Rashba says that for the appearance of Avodah Zarah, you have to lose your life. The Ran, however, says you don't have to lose your life for the appearance of Avodah Zarah. This is a very common discussion. Let me just finish the sentence and then we'll take it. Very common discussion. There's a case in Shulchan Aruch. Let's say someone is pursuing me with a knife. They're chasing after me down the street. And I could save myself by running into a church. Am I allowed to do that? I've never gotten this question. Like, no one's ever called in the cell phone and say, Rabbi Schwartz, I have a question. They're chasing after me. Knife, church. I never got that question, right? Okay, but it's a discussion in Shulchan Aruch as to whether it's permitted or not. The Torah and Siman Kuf Mem Tes of Yerideya discusses this. That's really the question as to whether a person is obligated to lose his life for the appearance of idolatry. Right? The cardinal sins themselves are Yehari Vaya, where you have to lose your life not to violate one of those three cardinal sins. But for the appearance that you're doing one of those, that's the question. So, it seems that the dispute between Mordechai and everyone else is that Mordechai felt that for the appearance of your life, the appearance of idolatry, you have to give up your life. And everyone else said that you don't have to, which is a dispute in the Rishonim. And the Vilna Gaon, at least, paskins la halacha, the Vilna Gaon decides this halachic question based on this issue. He says, well, if Haman is only wearing a Avodah Zarah thing, you're not actually bowing down to it, it's the appearance of idolatry, so that's a dispute, etc., between Mordechai and everyone else. The Vilna Gaon says that Mordechai was right and the others were wrong, although, yeah, okay. It probably, like, he ends up being a hero. Let me hear Rana's question, and then, yeah, Henry.
I mean, it's not just Mordechai's life, though. Like, fine, like, he wants to endanger his own life, or, like, feels this. Like, fine, but it's about...
You're putting the whole people in danger.
People, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a very big problem, no? It's much worse than... Okay, so if I want to give up my own life, the Rambam has a comment, I'm never allowed to give up my own life. But some of the commentaries on the Rambam say, the Nemuke Yosef is quoted by the Kesef Mishnah, that if a person is like a big tzaddik, is like the leader of the generation, and he wants to teach the people around him a lesson, or she wants to teach the people around her a lesson as to how to properly observe Judaism, so then you're allowed to give up your own life to teach a lesson. It's like educational. It seems to me it's like pretty bad education on a certain level. But okay, yeah. But that won't help in terms of everyone else dying. In this book that the Gush put out a few years ago, Hadassah Hi Esther, so Rav Yaakov Meidan, who's now one of the Rashi Yeshiva in the Gush, he has a whole essay to try to deal with that question. Quite honestly, I got confused in the middle of it. This is one of the reasons why I don't have that much say tonight. In both his essay, I just really began to lose my train of thought. But you could read it. Maybe you'll do better with it than I will. Yeah?
I know this might be going to feel... were there any heterim given in Spain back in the day during the Inquisition or in conversos?
So, that's a really hard question. I think normative Judaism did not give heterim and felt that people should lose their lives, but the practice clearly was that people became Christians, they at least in public. So that really relates to this question here in Avodah Zarah, this question here about Oved Avodah Zarah, Me'ahava Me'ira, this Gemara in Sanhedrin, that if a person worships idols without conviction, right? Rava says that you're not obligated. If Rava meant it's actually permitted, we'd have justification for what they did. But Tosis is not learning the Gemara that way. So I think that's exactly another analogy that's worth focusing on. So now, the real question is, push comes to shove, how come Mordechai is so proud of his Jewishness, and Esther, and he tells Esther, he's the one who tells Esther to hide your Jewishness? That's the question that we have to address. So, let's go back to the story a little bit. Why is it that Mordechai tells Esther, don't tell? Why does Mordechai tell Esther, don't tell anyone who you are? Like, what was Mordechai trying to accomplish? So there are a number of commentaries here. Let's try to study Rashi and the Ibn Ezra, and then maybe we'll offer another approach that in some ways takes some of the good aspects of each of these approaches. Good? Rashi's comments, Asher lo tagid, Pasuk Yod, that Mordechai said, don't tell. Rashi comments on the first side of the sheet, Kedei sheyomru shehim im mishpacha bezuya, vishalchuha, sheim yedu shehim im mishpachas sho'ol hamelech hayu machazikim bo. Rashi comments that the reason why Mordechai says, Esther, don't tell anyone who you are, because Esther had really good pedigree. Esther's a descendant of King Shaul. And Mordechai is saying, you know what, Esther, if you're going to say who you are, inevitably the king is going to want you. Remember, Ahasuerus married Vashti because Vashti is a descendant of kings. Vashti is a granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar, right? Ahasuerus was a stable boy, Chazal say. He probably felt very insecure about his monarchy, and he's marrying a woman from royal blood in order to establish himself. Mordechai says, Esther, if you're going to say who you are, they're going to want you, and I, Mordechai, don't want you to be the queen. I don't want you to be taken, because Ahasuerus is like a slimy guy. By the way, he is a slimy guy, no? The whole notion of like beauty pageants, I'm sorry, beauty pageants are slimy. Right? It's just
fat. You're using the kalim of the Beit HaMikdash.
What? Yeah, that's also bad. Beauty pageants are really slimy also. Right?
Yeah.
They're bad. Right? So now, the fact is, Mordechai, according to Rashi's explanation, is trying to avoid Esther being selected as the queen. Now, if this is the case, Pasuk Chaf is very difficult. The second Pasuk that I underlined. Because Esther has already become queen, right? In verses 16, she is taken to the palace. She becomes the queen. And still in verse 20, Esther is not saying who she is. If the whole reason why we don't want to tell is because we want you to avoid becoming the queen. Once you're the queen, you should be able to tell. No? Once you're the queen already, so say who you are. What's the big deal?
Because Vashti was the queen, but yet she was still killed. For reason whatsoever.
Okay, so this actually makes the problem even worse. Vashti is not killed for no reason. Vashti is killed because she doesn't do what the king wants. The king wants Esther to say who she is, no? The Gemara has many drushos to this effect. Maybe we could... here, Pasuk Yud Ches. Right? Vaya'as ha-melech mishtei gadol l'chosara v'avadav eis mishtei Esther v'hanachol l'mdinos ha-sav v'yitim ha-seis kiyad ha-melech. The king makes a big party for all of his officers. It's Esther's party. He gives them a reduction in taxes, and he gives gifts. The Gemara says that there is a progression over here. Ahasuerus first makes a big party. And at the party says, Esther, who are you? Where are you from? She doesn't say. Then the king says, I got to get this information. I'm going to even, like, not charge as much taxes. Who are you? She doesn't say. I'll give gifts to everybody. Who are you? She doesn't say. The king is trying, keeps on trying to find out who you are, and she doesn't say. Now, in some ways, that is really dangerous, because you know the history. You know that Vashti was killed because she's not listening to the king. And Esther, the king wants her to say who she is, where she's from, and she is not saying anything. So that is also a large problem in the story. Now, Rashi's comment, though, that we don't want Esther to become the queen, and that's why she doesn't say, has abundant textual evidence. The fact that Esther did not want to be the queen is clear from here. We can just go through the psukim. The pasuk says that each woman, when she'd come to the king, would ask for whatever perfumes and cosmetics that she wanted. Esther doesn't ask for anything. Why not? She doesn't want to go. Right? That's pretty obvious. She doesn't want to make herself prettier than necessary. The other... Here, what I have a few proofs. The psukim are all in the passive voice. Right? Pasuk tesazayin. Vatila kach Esther el ha-melech ha-chashverosh. She is taken. She doesn't go. That was like in Yiddish, it's an expression that to the chuppah they schlep you. Because they don't want you. You should see my wedding pictures. They don't want you. You don't want to go yourself. They're like, go, right?
Kicking and screaming.
Batila kach Esther. She is taken on. She's taken against her will. The Gemara, by the way, uses this in the halachic context. The Gemara asks a question that how was it permitted for Esther to be with Ahasuerus, for them to sleep together, when there's a halacha that in farhesia, in public, you're not allowed to violate any prohibition whatsoever, and you're obligated to give up your life for violations of prohibitions in public when the government is trying to tell you to publicly violate something to transgress Judaism. And the Gemara asks, wasn't Esther farhesia? Wasn't Esther also a case of public? Not that anything happened in public, but everybody knew about it, and therefore it is the same as being in public, right? So the Gemara answers, well, Esther herself knew that she was Jewish. So how is she allowed to violate a prohibition that is in public? The Gemara answers, well, Esther is completely passive. Esther, karka olam ha'isa, no? She's just like ground, like dirt. Like she's not totally passive, not active at all. Now that is really interesting. In other words, the Gemara in the halachic context is saying that Esther was being schlepped, she's being pulled, she doesn't want to go. This is along the lines of what Rashi is saying, don't say who you are because I don't want you to become the queen. Right? We could see this idea also, the Vilna Gaon comments in a few places in the Megillah, that sometimes you can learn something just from the music, from the trup of the Megillah. Here, let me just read for you Pasuk Yud Beis and Pasuk Tesvav, the way we lay the psukim. Uvagi ator na'aro v'na'aro lavo el ha-melech ha-chashverosh. Right? Now, let's do Pasuk Tesvav about Esther. Uvagi Tor Esther, Bas Avichayil, Dod Mordechai.
You're
dragging it out. She don't want to go. This isn't, right, that she's, every other girl, every other young woman, whatever they are, by the way, these are Na'ara. Na'ara is really very young girls, no? Not 75. Usually they're around 12, 12 and a half, which makes it even creepier, by the way. Just word to the wise. But Esther doesn't want to go. It's slow. It's deliberate. Like, she's walking like this, you know, like, yeah. I mean, every morning I have this with my kids. Go and brush your teeth. I'm going. This is life in the Schwartz house every single day, right? So Esther doesn't want to go, and that's the comment of Rashi in Pasuk Yud. Now, the Ibn Ezra takes a decidedly different approach than Rashi. The Ibn Ezra, in explaining why it is that Mordechai tells Esther not to tell, so let's read this Ibn Ezra, that I underlined a few lines of it. He has three explanations that we'll go through. Explanation one, Yesh Omrim, Ki Mordechai lo asa nechuna shetziva al Esther shelo tagid ama, ki pachad shelo yikachena hamelach leisha im yeda shehi mehagola. Hey, what does that mean?
That if she's from the diaspora, then he's not going to accept her. He only wants someone from his country.
In other words, right, good. Mordechai is saying, I don't want Esther to tell because Ahasuerus won't take her if he knows that she's not local.
But
that means that
the beauty contest throughout every place where Ahasuerus ruled.
So all the women, every place where they ruled is entitled to come. But the assumption is that Ahasuerus will be more inclined to take local talent. Or people, because, I mean, the Gemara has that comment that people are naturally attracted to the types from his own country, whatever that's supposed to mean. But the comment of the Ibn Ezra is interesting on twofold. One comment is that Mordechai wanted Esther to be taken, right? And he says, don't say where you're from, because if you say where you're from, there's less of a chance that you'll be taken. The second interesting thing in the Ibn Ezra is he notes that Mordechai lo asa nechona. Mordechai acted improperly. In other words, Mordechai should not have told Esther not to tell. Mordechai should have, right, told Esther, say who you are, according to this explanation, so that there is less of a chance that you'll be taken.
Yeah.
But then later on, he says, "How do you know that it wasn't for exactly this purpose that you were taking?"
We'll get there. We'll get there. I'm going to argue that there is a change.
Okay.
That there is a change.
Obviously.
Fine. Next comment of the Ibn Ezra. This. Third line that I underlined, Va'achirim amru, ki bederech nevu'ah o b'chalom yada shetavo teshuah al yada l'Yisrael. Right? Explanation number two, the Ibn Ezra, is that Mordechai had some prophetic knowledge or a dream that the salvation will come through Esther, and he doesn't say where she is from. Why? How does that fit in? So apparently, by not saying where she is, he's allowing the prophecy to take its own course of action.
But isn't there a problem with that? Because isn't the salvation supposed to come from David?
Well, the ultimate salvation of Mashiach is supposed to come from David. In this one episode in Jewish history, the salvation is going to come through Mordechai and through Esther, ultimately. They're not from David. But there's a prophecy that right now, remember, this is a book of the Bible. Prophecy is still alive and well.
Right.
Right? So, That's explanation number two.
But isn't ultimately the salvation really coming from God, even though he's...
Of course. But as we you were in TLS, last week. But the whole idea of the Migo is that we hide that.
Right, and he's using these characters to do his
yeah,
work.
Yeah, of course. Given, right? That's Bible. That's Bible 101. Salvation comes from God. Gotcha. Now, so the second explanation of the Ibn Ezra is that there's some sort of prophecy that the salvation will come through Esther, and based on that prophecy, Mordechai is saying, "Don't tell." We'll come back to explanation number two in a minute. V'hanachon be'inai, the Ibn Ezra says, it seems to me that the correct explanation is that Mordechai did this in order that Esther should be able to keep Torah and not to eat non-kosher food, and that she should be able to keep Shabbos in secret. Apparently, if they would have known that she was Jewish, they would not have allowed her to keep Shabbos and to keep mitzvos, etc. By not saying she's able to hide and keep mitzvos. If they would have known that she's Jewish, they would have forced her to violate Shabbos, because this is an anti-Semitic regime. But by not saying, she's able, at least covertly, to
a
keep
vegan.
Shabbos. Huh?
A vegan,
right. Yeah, actually, that's what the Gemara says, that she ate lots of seeds. There's a minhag that on Purim you're supposed to eat. One of the reasons why Hamantashen have like that awful poppy seed thing. Yeah, it's terrible. It's like one of the worst minhagim in Judaism. But I just don't like poppy seeds. You should know, one of my 4-year-old on Sunday, my wife made the mistake of, instead of buying plain bagels, she bought like one poppy seed bagel. And my 4-year-old made me rip every single poppy seed off the bagel before he would eat it.
This he doesn't like them either.
Huh?
He doesn't like them either.
Correct. So he's not that stupid to like poppy seeds. The fact is that Ibn Ezra's third comment is that there's an attempt that we want Esther to be able to keep Torah and mitzvos in
discreetly.
Good. Now, it seems to me, and some of this idea is based on an article in this book. The article is written by Avraham Shama. It's based on that, but I think we can maybe put together a composite picture along the following lines. Perhaps there's a difference between Mordechai originally telling Esther not to tell, and the reason why Esther subsequently does not tell who she is. Originally, Mordechai saying, "Esther, I don't want you to tell because there's anti-Semitism out there." The comment of, right, the way we understood at the beginning, right? Mordechai saying, "Hide." But we were bothered by a question. So if Mordechai is worried about anti-Semitism, how come Mordechai himself is so proudly not bowing down? Ki yigid lahem asher hu Yehudi, sangeh when I'm Jewish. If you're worried about anti-Semitism, be quiet. I think the answer might be something along the lines of comment number two of the Ibn Ezra, which is something that Rashi hits at in Pasuk Yud Aleph as well. Let's read Rashi in Pasuk Yud Aleph. Rashi writes, "Ze'acha mishnei tzadikim shenitan lahem remez Yeshua, David u'Mordechai." There are two tzadikim, Rashi says, who get a hint, an indication that the salvation is going to come forth. David and Mordechai. David, that the Pasuk says, "Gamas haribas adov hikav decha." He says, the only reason this happened is that I should be able to fight with Goyas. How come I had this episode that I kill the lion and the bear? Little dove, how come that happened? The answer is that God is giving me a message. You know what? You could fight Goyas. It's a hint. And Mordechai said, V'chein Mordechai amar lo, Yirela tzadeh shetilakach lemishkav areo, Ela shasida lakom lahoshel Yisrael. But Mordechai said, I also have a hint. The hint is that there's no reason why a tzadekes, a righteous woman like Esther, would be taken to the king if not for the fact that the salvation will come for her. So I would argue as follows. There, originally, Esther is not telling because originally Esther is hiding her identity based on the anti-Semitism. But once she's taken, and she's taken against everyone's intentions. We don't want Esther to be taken, right? We don't want it to be taken. We also don't want it to be known as Jewish. Things are dangerous. And you don't want a Jewish woman to become the queen, so we don't want any of that. But she's taken. So Mordechai says, oh, she's taken? That obviously shows that, you know what, there's going to be some salvation. And then Mordechai changes. And Mordechai says, okay, I'm confident. There's going to be a salvation. I'm going to be proud of my Jewishness because I know we're going to be okay. And therefore Mordechai says, I can act like a Jew. I'm going to walk around the street with my yarmulke proudly displayed. I'm not going to bow down. The thing is, Esther's already cloistered in the palace. And Esther doesn't know, right, that Mordechai interpreted the fact that she was chosen to mean that therefore everything is hunky-dory because she's away from Mordechai. So Esther continues doing what Mordechai originally said, which is not telling, but she doesn't realize that everything changed. She didn't really understand the reason why Mordechai, right? And that's what the pasuk keeps on pointing out, that Esther's doing what Mordechai said. That means she's doing what Mordechai said originally. But things changed. What changed is that now, after you're taken, right, it would seem like that whole approach doesn't fit in. Now, I think this can explain a lot about Mordechai's behavior. Mordechai's like walking around the palace. Right, the pasuk says that Mordechai keeps on going back and forth in front of the palace to see what's going on with Esther. You know what Mordechai is doing? Mordechai is waiting to see what is this miracle that's going to happen. It's almost like Yaakov Avinu is waiting. Yeah, you know that some miracle is going to happen. And Mordechai is waiting because he had this, I would say, premonition, or the Ibn Ezra says it's a nevuah or a dream. He knows good things are going to happen. Now, part of Mordechai's plan of hanging around with Esther is that Mordechai is trying to get into Esther and to influence her. So what he's trying to do is to position himself as an advisor for Esther, even though Esther is now the queen, and he's pretty far away, but he wants to position himself as an advisor. The problem is, and this is the approach that they take in this book. It's a little different than what I'm saying. They take the approach, as Avram Shammah takes the approach, that maybe there are two separate reasons why Mordechai tells Esther not to tell. Reason number one is anti-Semitism, like we mentioned. Reason number two is that Mordechai is trying to position himself as an advisor to Esther. And everyone knows that if the advisor is a close relative of yours, that's not a good advisor. So Mordechai, later on, is saying, I'm trying to position myself as an advisor. And therefore, Esther, don't say who you are, because that's going to blow my cover. Right? That's the way they take it. Then, the Megillah has this story of Big Son and Seresh. The Big Son and Seresh episode has like nothing to do with the price of tea in China. It's like, so these guys are saying that like the king's going to be killed. Mordechai tells the king. Later on, it comes back, and that's why Mordechai is like told. That's why Haman is told to like put Mordechai on the horse and ride in front of him, etc. But the episode, in context, doesn't seem to have much to do with anything. The answer is that Mordechai's entree to the palace apparently existed beforehand. Right, because Mordechai is walking around, hanging around at the palace, and that's how he hears. He's already Yoshev B'Shar HaMelech, and he hears that Big Son and Seresh are hashing his plans.
Yeah.
Maybe. Like, maybe he's on the outside and he hears what's going on the inside. I imagine what the gate was. I don't know. Maybe. But it could be that the issue over here is like this, that Mordechai wants to be an advisor to the king because he realizes that there's this prophecy that the Jewish people are going to be saved. And he wants to be involved in that. And he says, okay, if I can get into the king, I can be part of this process. The problem is just that the king isn't going to let him in, knowing that he is related to Esther. So you can't say that you're related to Esther. But Mordechai then proves his loyalty to the king in an unequivocal way. He saves the king's life. Okay. Now, once you save the king's life, the king's going to say, I have no choice. I'll make you a real advisor. Then you have the in. Then you can influence what's going on. So again, these are some of the thoughts that I wanted to bring out. I'm not sure how much of this gels, how much it doesn't gel. But the basic issue, the real question to think about, which I never really pondered, is how come Esther is careful not to tell, and Mordechai is telling? I would argue that the difference is that Esther and Mordechai are living in two different realms. Mordechai is living in like the post-prophetic realm. He already knows that there's going to be a salvation, therefore Mordechai is saying, when Esther finally reveals who she is, that's exactly when the salvation takes place. So these are some of the points that I wanted to mention, and again, I thank you for coming and listening, and next Wednesday night is actually Purim. So, it's getting close. You have to start preparing. No. Yeah.
Maybe we'll
ask me now. Let's just pat. We'll finish the shiur. Thank you for coming, and now you can.